Sean Eldridge, I guess because we're so close to the election, I want to give you a moment to say, why do you deserve the vote here? What is it about your candidacy that makes you the obvious choice?
Well, I certainly want to bring some new energy, some new urgency and new ideas to the table. I believe if we keep the same leadership that we've had for the last 2 years, for the next 2 years, we're going to get the same results. And I'm proud of the experiences that I've had, whether it was helping to run the marriage equality campaign in New York State, whether it was helping to support small businesses in our community or serving on the board of Planned Parenthood in the Hudson Valley. I think that those experiences would enable me to be an effective representative. And I hope to bring a greater sense of urgency to the table that seems to be really lacking. I also think I'd be a uniquely independent representative. I'm not taking any corporate PAC contributions at all. And that means that I'll be accountable only to the voters.
Yeah, but you're a Democrat's Democrat. I mean, so you have a philosophy, certainly.
I have a philosophy, but I think that being independent means being independent of corporate PACs, but also being independent of your own leadership. I mean, on the campaign trail, I've talked a lot about moments where I disagree with President Obama. One issue that people still talk quite a bit about is privacy and how the NSA has been incredibly aggressive and I think infringing on privacy and constitutional rights. So I'm not afraid to stand up to my own party, to stand up to corporate PACs.
Well, just let's proceed with that one for a second. Assuming that our mail is being looked at least tracked, that the government is arguing that they should not be forbidden from looking at your email, but they argue, don't they, that if you don't want a smart bomb in Times Square, you better let them do that. How do you answer that?
Well, I think we're living in an era of big data. There's no question about that, and I think there's no reversing that. And big data means that large corporations know a lot about us. It also means that the government knows a lot about us. What I'd like to see is a much more honest and open conversation about this with the American people, rather than doing things like massive spying and data collection without informing the American people that it's been happening. When President Bush was in office, he created something that was called the Council on Bioethics. And it was a space where, in a bipartisan way, folks talked about things like stem cell research. They talked about abortion. They talked about the changes in medical technology and how that was going to impact public policy. And it was a space to have these conversations. Now, I don't know that that council had a huge impact, but it was a way to have open, difficult conversations. I'd like to see something like that around big data and privacy. I think we need to be honest with the American people about what it means to collect a lot of information. And I do think we need to protect the Constitution. And it seems like there were some infringements.
But Sean, what if they, in fact, didn't agree with you? They said, okay, my freedom is and the sanctity of my family and everything else is more important than whether somebody looks at this data.
Well, I think we need to protect our national security and we have to find that difficult balance. But I certainly think we need to make sure the American people are heard in that process. And one thing that I would point out is that we are leading by example as a country, so that if we have this kind of wiretapping of phones, this kind of collection of emails, that means that we're giving a green light to other countries to do the same thing. So because we're doing this, it will make it a lot harder for us to say to China or Russia or any other country, respect our privacy, because if we're not respecting theirs, then we're leading by example. And this technology is only going to grow. Big data is only going to grow. And I think it's important that we put protections in place that respect privacy. And I think government certainly has a role to play. We've seen with private companies, hackers come in and steal tens of millions of dollars of credit card numbers and very personal information. And, you know, when you go to shop at a Target now or a Walmart, they know a lot about you. They may know if you're pregnant. They may know, you know, what what you've purchased in the past. And I think some people are alarmed by that. So I'd say let's just be a little bit more honest about how we're collecting that information and where we want to draw the line. I think it is fair to say there should be some limits on what we want to share and what we don't want to share.
I think I understand what your problem is in this election, if I can be so bold. Let me just say what I think it is. You're a Democrat. Many people subscribe to your philosophy. They think you're right. But they like Chris Gibson, and they don't know you yet. How do you get them to like you?
Well, I think we've been working really hard to travel throughout all 11 counties, 165 towns, and introduce ourselves. I don't think you can rely just on TV ads and mail to run a campaign. You've got to show up, and you've got to listen, and you got to have those conversations. And that's led to a lot of support. I would say when you look at the issues, whether it's raising the minimum wage, whether it's dealing with campaign finance reform or immigration reform, voters in the district are with us on the issues, more so than Congressman Gibson. And one of our challenges has been that in the district, he talks a lot about no labels, moderate leadership. But his voting record, I do think, has been a different story. He talks about being a pro-choice Republican. He's voted against choice at every opportunity he's had. He supports the Hobby Lobby decision, which I think was a pretty misguided decision. You know, he talks about no labels leadership. He votes to sue President Obama because they don't agree with him on one issue. And I think we've seen again and again a difference between what he has said and his voting record. So we've certainly been pointing that out along the way on the campaign trail. And I think we've got to continue to do that in the final stretch. But I do think we've been closing the gap as people do realize that I'm fighting for the policies that will make life better for working families, and that Congressman Gibson has been siding with John Boehner on many fronts and not representing the values of the region. You know, in one of our last debates, it came out that he continues to oppose marriage equality in 2014. Now, I realize that marriage equality is not the top issue for people in this election, but I do think it speaks to a certain set of values. You know, Republicans often talk about freedom and fighting for freedom. Well, I think fighting for freedom means fighting for freedom for everyone, freedom for families to be able to get married and protect themselves, freedom for a woman's right to choose. I'd like to see more consistency on that. And I do think that, you know, with New York State passing marriage equality in 2011, to continue to oppose that in 2014 is a very conservative stance.
So if you win, congratulations. We're getting close. If you lose,
thank you.
If you lose, then how do you take it? What happens to you? Do you stick around and say, okay, then I'll run again? After all, Chris Gibson has said that he's term limited himself. What would you do?
Well, I'd say we're very focused on winning this in the final days. And here's why. I genuinely believe that two more years of this Congress means two more years of hurt for families in our region and two more years of inaction. I think families are getting hurt in two ways. One, we've seen cuts across the board, things like the sequester that did harm Head Start programs, that harmed community action programs and Pell Grants. So we've seen that kind of challenge and that kind of harm. But we're also seeing the harm of inaction. Comprehensive immigration reform had a historic opportunity when the Senate passed a bipartisan bill that would secure our borders, that would give Dreamers an opportunity, that would help our farmers have a guest worker program. And this House of Representatives wouldn't even take that up for a vote. And Congressman Gibson continues to oppose that. So I think if we continue to delay and put off difficult decisions, I'm worried about our country. I'm worried that we have to make these difficult choices. We have to invest in our infrastructure. We have to make college more affordable for young people because other countries aren't slowing down. Right now in China, to graduate from high school, you have to have at least one computer science and programming class. In the United States, 1 in 10 of our schools has a class like that. And there's going to be 1.4 million job opportunities in computer science and programming in our country by the end of the decade. So we've got to compete. We've got to invest. And we need a Congress that's willing to get to work, not a Congress that's making history by being the least productive body our country has ever seen.
Sean Eldridge, Democratic candidate for New York's 19th congressional district seat, held by Chris Gibson. I thank you so much for coming, and it's always a pleasure, and we look forward to seeing you for many years in our area.
Thanks for having me.